rock and roll generation, 1965.
The big folk artist when Dylan started out playing the guitar was Woody Guthrie. He was about the only really big influential person. And much of Dylan's early work shows a lot of Woody Guthrie's influence. Woody Guthrie, of course, is the father of Arlo Guthrie, of Alice's Restaurant fame, and other kinds of fame. I'm Alexander Goodfellow. The year is 1965 on the rock and roll generation. 65 was a very exciting year. People like Dylan, the Love and Spoonful, Motown was cranking it out, the Stones had the number one song of the year, and rhythm and blues, black music, R&B, soul, whatever you wanted to call it, was really moving out on its own. And right in the front was James Brown. Really classic songs came out of 65. One of them was a song by a group called Them, whose leader, lead singer, and primary composer was a fellow who wasn't really that well recognized in 65, but he is today. His name was Van Morrison, so to speak, in 1965. One of them was a fellow by the name of John Sebastian, whose father had been a classical harmonica player, or mouth harp player, if you want to be classical about it. But he formed a group with a fellow by the name of Zal Yanofsky, who had played for a while in a Washington-based group called the Mugwumps, which later turned out the Mugwumps were what? Let's see. There was Mama Cass Elliott and Denny Doherty, who both went on to help form the Love and Spoonful. There was Zal himself, and there was, what's his name? Kid by the name of... Oh, I know who it was. His name was James Hendrix, and he turned out to be later. He married Mama Cass, and he was quite a songwriter. Wrote most of his stuff, though, ended up being done by Johnny Rivers, as a matter of fact. Fine group, Mugwumps. Weren't really that recognized here in the Washington area back in 65, but they all went on to do good things. Anyhow, John Sebastian got together a group. It was John, a kid by the name of Zal Yanofsky, who had been in the Mugwumps, and then there was, Peter Boone, and then there was the drummer, whose name is Mike Butler. The Love and Spoonful. So nice. John Sebastian, the Love and Spoonful from the Rock and Roll Generation, year 1965. Alexander Goodfellow, WPGC, it's 11:22. And in 1965, one of the groups to come along who would really be a major influence in American music for the next few years, and the group is still around today, though not in its original form, was a group called The Byrds, consisted of a guy named Jeff McGuinn, who later changed his name to Roger for no particular reason. But he played a 12-string Rickenbacker guitar, an electric. Park, Rickenbacker, and people would say, "What's this, an electric 12-string guitar?" Well, the Byrds were strange, though. They sort of amalgamated folk and rock, and just a fine, fine, fine band. They were the first of what you might call the thinking musicians, at least they were in America. They were very articulate, at least David Crosby and McGuinn himself were. David Crosby, of course, going on later to, you know, play with Crosby, Stills, Nash, Young, etc., 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 etc. And they were immensely popular. I mean, they were almost as big as the Beatles on the West Coast. And people would come to see them. Bob Dylan would get on stage and play with them, which was quite a compliment to anybody, you know. And people like Allen Ginsberg would come see them when they were in New York. Timothy Leary. Norman Mailer said his favorite rock and roll band was the Byrds. The song that really got the Byrds started in 65 was a Bob Dylan song. David Crosby, the Byrds from 65, and Bob Dylan's Mr. Tambourine Man. Alexander Goodfellow, WPGC, the rock and roll generation. The year this hour is 1965. It's 11:25 in north, southeast, and west. The all-new Northeast Ford, tops on the rest, is at the intersection of New York and West Virginia Avenues in northeast. Where else? Beatles, of course, there was no stopping them in 65. And they were writing continually better stuff like this. She don't care.
WGCFM Morningside.
Do you want to dance and hold my hand? Tell me, baby, I'm your loving man. Oh, baby, do you want to dance? Do you want to dance? Come to the moonlight. Hold me, baby, all through the night. Oh, baby, do you want to dance? Oh,
do you want to dance? 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 Do you want to dance under the moonlight? Kiss me, baby, all through the night. Oh, baby, do you want to dance? Do you want to dance under the moonlight? Squeeze me, squeeze me all through the night. Oh, baby, do you want to dance? Oh,
dance the Bobby Freeman tune, the Beach Boys from the Rock and Roll Generation, year 1965. 11:32 with Alexander Goodfellow from WPGC. The leader of the Beach Boys was one of the three brothers in the group, and the leader was Brian Wilson, who, though at first didn't write the majority of the material, for instance, that wasn't a Brian Wilson composition. As I said, that was Bobby Freeman's song. That was actually a cover. Bobby Freeman turned out a better version of it, as far as I'm concerned. But Brian Wilson went on to become one of the few true geniuses, perhaps, that this idiom has, the others being people like Paul Lennon, Paul, all doing fine tonight, Paul McCartney, John Lennon, Bob Dylan, Frank Zappa. And but England, in the meantime, kept turning some people out who were really doing just some incredible things as far as rock and roll was concerned. And Britain was still leading the pack in a lot of ways in 1965. One of the British groups to debut in America in 65 was the darling pop act of the mod set in England. Of course, back in the mid-60s, there was all this concern about the mods and the rockers and so forth. And mods always wore fancy little clothes and so forth. This group did. They were led by a young man who had a very large nose, also played a Rickenbacker, same sort of guitar that Roger McGuinn played in the Byrds. And he was a very articulate and erudite young man, concerned with the questions of the day. How to go out, how to get a girl, how to pick up a girl, how to make it with a girl. Later on, he would be more involved in other things. He would write things like the first rock opera to receive any attention at all, and they would really freak the whole continent of America out at the Monterey Pop Festival in 67. The guy to whom I'm referring is a fellow by the name of Peter Townshend. His group was The Who.
Can't explain.
I'm feeling good now, yeah, but
can't explain. This is the continuing story of the rock and roll generation.
Joe Royal and Down in the Boondocks, one of those great teenage songs, you know, about I want to go out with Mary Lou, but she lives on the wrong side of the tracks. My parents won't let me, so we sneak out at night, and then we got caught by my father at the high school basketball game. That's Billy Joe Royal. He was, what's his name? What's his name's little brother? What was his what was his name? Gene Pitney. Yeah, that's right. That's Gene Pitney's little brother. Alexander Goodfellow, WPGC. It's 11:40 on the Rock and Roll Generation. The year is 1965. We were talking about California. The big craze out there was for the Birds. And also, of course, the Beach Boys had a very strong stronghold. And the go-go thing was really getting big in California. Now, you were seeing all these go-go joints. Of course, the biggest of them all was the Whiskey a Go-Go. And there was a fellow who was discovered in there by the name of Johnny Rivers. Johnny Rivers took off like a shot. He was so popular that he was asked to sing the title song for a new TV show, which was patterned after James Bond. The James Bond craze was in its full swing. You could go to the dime store and buy any number of articles that had 007 written on the side, because every guy in the world wanted to be like James Brown. You could buy 007 aftershave, you could have a 007 lunchbox, you know, a 007 belt, a 007 cap gun. And the TV show I mentioned that was patterned after James Bond was Secret Agent Man, and Johnny Rivers sang the title song for the TV show.
There's a man who leads a life of danger. To everyone he meets, he stays a stranger. Secret agent man.
Rock and Roll Generation, you're 65. Johnny Rivers, who is a big talent, even though he's a fairly short guy. He was only about 5'5" or something. A secret agent man. Alexander Goodfellow, WPGC. It's 11:44, and the WPGC environment, mostly cloudy tonight. Lows to 33. Going to rain tomorrow, so they say. Right now, the good guy degrees are down to 43. And in 65, one of the other British groups to debut in America during that year was a group who started out being real rockers. Their first album was a real fine rock and roll album. It's sort of a collector's item now. You can have a hard time going out trying to find the thing, but if you do, it's worth your time. They did songs like I'll Go Crazy by James Brown. They were very concerned with being a hardcore rock and roll group, though today they aren't. Even though their most recent album shows evidence of them getting sort of back into a rocking bag. For a long time there in the late 60s, they were turning out sort of neoclassical albums, sorts of very, you know, philosophical and heavy and deep, you know, things like that. The mind boggled at the philosophical implications. But the group in 65 had a fine hit song called Go Now. The group is the Moody Blues. PGC, it's 11:48. Incidentally, one of the original members of the Moody Blues was a kid by the name of Denny Lane, who, after leaving the Moody Blues, played with Ginger Baker and Ginger Baker's Air Force for a while, and now he's with Paul McCartney's group, Wings. He's on the new Wings Wildlife album. Denny Lane, he used to be with the Moody Blues. And 65, well, here, let me preface this comment with the fact, I read recently that somebody, yes, one of the computer freaks somewhere, had fed all this information into a computer and come out with the fact, so he said, you know, which was fully substantiated by just reams of paperwork, that by 1975 or something, there would be no more melodies left for popular music because they would have all been exhausted. You know, he says there are only so many mathematical combinations possible of all the notes, say, on a piano or something like that. And he said by 75, he said there would be no more new melodies left to be to come up with, for people to come up with, because they would have all been exhausted at the rate we're going. Well, in 65, maybe somebody was beginning to feel that it was getting sort of hard to come up with a new melody. So people during that year, and, well, certainly a little bit before that and since then, started turning to classical music, looking for some riffs that they could base some melodies on. And one of the big tunes of 65 was a song taken from a Beethoven concerto, and they, you know, they fairly openly admitted where it had come from, and they even called the song a lover's concerto, and it was sung by a group called The Toys.
Yeah.
Rock and Roll Generation, year 1965. The Toys there with the Lovers Concerto. I'm Alexander Goodfellow. This is WPGC's Rock and Roll Generation. I would like to take this opportunity to publicly apologize. A lot of Bach fans in the audience. I was wrong. It wasn't Beethoven. It was Bach. So that was taken from a Bach concerto. Okay? All right. The time is 11:52. We'll be back in a couple minutes with more music.
This is the continuing story of the Rock and Roll Generation, 1965.
Feeling fine.
Feeling fine.
Don't
A little bit of British bubblegum. That's Peter Noon and Herman Hermits from 65, the rock and roll generation here this hour. It's 12:03 from WPG's here with Alexander Goodfellow, and it is now... oh my goodness, it's Thursday, December the 30th. The reason I just freaked out was because I just realized it's my birthday. What do you know? I'm 12 years old. By far and away, the most important song of 65 was the one that really established the Rolling Stones as one of the biggest groups of all time. The song needs no introduction.